have the ground game. We've actually built the practices that people aspire to create.
History will prove one of us correct.
Wait. You're not letting me finish, bro.
This is how you become bulletproof. Bulletproof. Bulletproof.
Well, AI's taken over everything, Trey, so that's a good intro. What do you mean, Copilot versus ChatGPT?
I was listening to a guy who gave a lecture on a lot of that, who is in that space, and he said, and you know, granted, this is someone that's in it who is big on privacy, but the difference between them, which they're pretty much exactly the same thing, but he said they're not going to leverage your data to learn in Copilot where they do in ChatGPT. Same program.
Yeah. Copilot's interesting. I mean, in that it's going to, you know, it's a Microsoft Office version of it. And especially for analyzing documents, I feel like that's going to be the thing that's going to be able to help dentists. Because everyone always talks, and you guys correct me if you're wrong, but it's like, hey, I get these documents, I get spreadsheets, I get financial information, but I really don't know how to interpret it. So I feel, and that is kind of the job of a CFO. And I know we've talked about kind of part-time CFO and things like that. But I feel like, Trey, the biggest benefit to the dentist is going to be, you know, not creating like an LOI like Dwight is doing, because that's a one-off. Like Dwight, we were talking about that right before we hit record, how you're kind of using it to morph and clean up an LOI. But I feel like it could be something that you could leverage for your trailing 12-month documentation and your P&Ls, meaning you could upload it and then you could chat with it and saying, hey, what do you see here that's wrong? Right? What do you see here that's right? If you had to forecast where I was in the next 3 months, you know, forecasting is a big thing in the financial world. If you had to forecast where I was with 3 to 6 months, is this good? Is this bad? And really just almost use it as a free CFO that, you know, you're not worried about them charging you hourly kind of thing. You could just, you're just chatting with them, you know, hence the name. So Trey, I know I just went off on a tangent, but I always look for the dental application. And I've actually experimented on trying to do this as a recently, there was a YouTube video that there's a YouTube video that I bookmarked. It was going over this very thing and I just haven't had time to go over it again. But that's,
I think
not
that's
what
good
we're
to talk about though.
Yeah, but
well,
that's not what we're talking about.
Let me say this real quick. That's good to know, because I think one of the big problems people are going to run into with all this is what to do with it. So that's a really good point.
Yeah, it's neat and it's fancy and it's fun and it's wow. But if the rubber never meets the road, then who gives a shit? Right? And so, yeah, Trey, to your point, like, but shit, every dentist on the planet couldn't use their own CFO, right? They just don't want to. You know, but sometimes it's unwarranted to hire one because you don't have the scale or the size or the revenues to do so. You know, same with legal questions. I got to tell you, man, I mean, there's so many times and you guys, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. So many times in my past that I'm just like, I really want a quick answer from my lawyer on this, but I don't want to send this email because I don't want to get a bill for $400. And I sure as hell don't want the 100 reasons why, you know, like, so I just want to chat with someone who knows, like.
You don't want the 14 questions beyond the question.
No, I don't want
answer.
The justification of, well, I spent 30 minutes on the reply to you, therefore now I'm charging you a half hour bill of time. And so,
there's also,
and I was
like a spirit. There's also a spirit that the lawyer wants to justify their fee.
100%.
So they will tell you that, you know, business degrees are made for people that want to go forward and start new things. The law degrees are meant to stop people and protect people. So a lawyer's job is to stop you and protect you. So there's a delicate balance. So I think what you're speaking to is like a fractional in-house type of person that knows your risk tolerance and understanding and works with an executive team. That would be awesome. Like, we don't need full-time counsel. We don't need a full-time CFO.
Look at the disruption that's happening, and you know, and maybe for a good way. And this is one of, this is why I think that dentistry is in a blessed position. Yes, I think we will have some adjustment to this AI kind of renaissance, but the fact that we actually are physically using our hands and our brains and our things like that, right, and doing it, no different than like HVAC people are last on the disruption list, right, and plumbers and things like that. It's a trade, whether you like it or not. I think that's a great thing. Versus, you know, they just launched AI Sori, S-O-R-I, I believe I'm saying that right, or maybe it's Sora. But have you guys seen this? Where you can, it's text to video creation, and it's amazing with a capital A, like, it's incredible. I first time I saw it, I was like, holy, and immediately in the first 5 seconds, I go, shit, like, my kids are going to be able to produce like motion lane pictures just by using creative. So there goes videographers out the door. Like, we already know that, like, graphic artists kind of out the door, you know, like, you know, now I'm talking about a CFO. I'm not saying they're out the door in law, but like, all this shit is like, you know, there's a roadmap to this disruption, and everyone's going to be on the path. It's just how far down the path are you? Yeah, I sure would like being a dentist is all I can say.
Yeah, very true.
All right. Well, that is not what we're going to talk about. So today's topic, and Craig, you are the ideator, the curator of, and I am actually sitting in a different country right now than you guys. So Craig and I were having a different chat about, like, well, you know, we need a good topic. He's like, you know what we should talk about is what they should. Craig, maybe you jump in.
Well, I just think that I'm going to be speaking for Nova Southeastern. I'm speaking to a bunch of new dentists, and I just thought of this. I'm like, you know, it's like the five things they should have taught you in dental school but didn't. And you know, it's like that saying that we know what we know and we know what we don't know, but we don't know what we don't know. And this is the ass kicking that comes out when you graduate. So for the spirit of all those that are in dental school or recently minted, or even if you've been out for, you know, a couple of decades, this is just maybe refresher for some, but going to be brand new learning for most.
And will it just be head nodding for those people who have been out 5 to 10 years and are practicing, or they just like, yeah, they should have, or will there be something that you feel applies to everybody?
I think there'll be something that applies to everybody on this one.
I agree. So let's get into that then. Let's get into it. When you thought of this idea, Craig, what was, so you're speaking to a group of
dental students.
Yeah, they're dental students. Yep.
Yeah. When you were kind of ideating this concept, what were you thinking you would start first with? Like, you would say, hey guys.
Well, I asked a couple of questions. I said, listen, when I went to school 100 years ago, there was a lot of teachers that instructors that really had no business being dental school instructors. They were hated dentistry. They clearly were not good at communicating with people, and they were teaching. And I said, maybe it's gotten better. Maybe you don't have those anymore. To which the two people that were on the phone, like, no, unfortunately, we still have those. So here we are, by virtue of, you know, there are those who teach and for the love of teaching, and they're great at what they do, and they're excellent clinically, and they were business people, and they ran successful practices. Well, let's face it, there's a lot that are not. So we're getting, number one, a filter, like you always say, Peter, that people told you, this is how much you'll make in dental school. Remember, you always say that.
Correct.
You were told.
Correct.
You will not make more than blank. And you had the bravado or whatever to say, screw you, watch me.
No, well, yes and no. At the beginning, because I made $0 and it was all the money in the world. Like, they said, well, you're going to make, you're going to be a general dentist because you're in the middle of the pack. And here's what you'll make, because that's what dentists make. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a lot. But then you're right, Craig. Then when I started exposing myself to different environments, and I went to kind of the first AACD meeting as a dental student, I remember being like, oh, shoot, this is not what I was told. This is the different narrative. There are people there in, you know, $5,000 suits, dentists walking around the trade floor. You know, not that that's the thing, but like, there was a different swagger to some of these dentists than I thought. All of them were like,
the good news is they're still there because they bought those $5,000 suits. So they're still practicing clinically 24 years later.
Well, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
No, I know. I just thought it was funny to take a punch at them. But
you experienced a different piece of the bell curve, is what you did.
Yeah, for sure. You do. Yeah. You do. Yeah. And then, of course, what did Peter do? Peter says, okay, AACD, this is the way to make the most amount of money with my two hands. And I'm going to be an apex predator, like at least three of us were. Trey, no offense. I don't think you ever reached the apex predator status of dentistry. And I actually think that's a compliment.
Here we
to
go
you.
Again. Here
no,
we
I,
go.
No,
we might have been down this road. We know where this one ends.
No,
I'll be back in a bit. Hold on.
It's a credit to you because
I'm just fucking with
what
you.
Dwight, Peter, and I had to do was shift gears from $2 million with our own hands and replace that with other people. You know, so this is the natural trend. You get out of school, I'm going to optimize my clinical skills such that I can produce the most amount of money with my two hands. And then at a certain point, you're like, okay, I can't go on vacation. I have no control over my schedule. I'm booked out for 6 months. I am the guy or the girl. I've built it, got 100,000 followers on Instagram or what have you. And now I can't even breathe. And what's the next level? The next level is trying to scale a business. So just that conversation alone, because everyone is telling you in dental school, there's a pervasive narrative, whether it's through the supply house or through the banks, and they're all telling you, you need to go out and become a business owner. And like I asked my friend Michael at NSU, have you had any business training? Nada. There's nothing. Still nothing. Like I figured since I went to school 100 years ago, things have changed. There's still, at least at the school I'm talking about, no business training whatsoever. Hey everybody, registration is now open for our 7th annual summit. Is that right, Peter? Our 7th?
7th.
That's crazy. This time at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback in Scottsdale, Arizona, you can immerse yourself in innovation, inspiration, unite your team, which is most important, and at the same time, earn 16 CE credits. Renew your practice, transform your life, June 14th and 15th. Registration's now open. Don't delay. These things always sell out. This one will as well. Go to bulletproofsummit.com. 2 days that will redefine your practice life. We guarantee it.
Yeah.
So
what say you guys? Let's say you guys about what would you piggyback on that or add something that you would think that you should have been told?
I just, you know, just to throw one off, you know, because the second you said that, I just started writing down a few. And I think one of the biggest ones for me that changed was just the idea of having, like, if I was told, like, as you got out, don't mirror image the learning scale of exiting dental school as you did in dental school. Try and get as much business CE as you're getting dental CE. I think that that would help us, even as associates. You want to feel like you want to become a partner of a practice, or if you want to build your own practice, something like that, you should be starting to, like, gain a lot of that knowledge. I know right off the bat, everybody thinks I want to produce more and I want to get more and I want to do this, and you don't. And so I get it, but, like, there's also the side of, like, why? Why am I learning to do that? Is it just hot and sexy right now? But is it, you know, what actually maintains quality bills, you know, bill payment, and maintains a good business, as opposed to just shooting for the stars and thinking that that's okay? That was, like, the first one I wrote down right off the bat, was just understanding that you needed to have some business CE, not just some dental CE. And I think that was the main one, the first one I wrote down. The second one I wrote down just right away was, I wish that there was more of an appreciation for the profession, but notoriously, because you're taught by individuals who either got hurt and have a sob story as to why they're teaching in dental school, or because of the fact that their business model did not succeed and they chose to teach, or it's on the opposite end. It's those who have done it all the way through, and there's very few of them, and they're retiring, but they feel like they need to give back. That's like less than 10%.
They're usually part-timers too, though, Dwight.
Yeah, and then they're part-timers, and they're not really incentivized because they don't care to make more money, and they're not there spending the extra time. So
not
enough
to make an impact, a true impact is what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That was in my experience. I had a couple that I was like, damn, you know.
Did you have any business? Did you have any business-minded instructors in your schooling? Either one, all three of you, any of you?
Just the part-timers that came in.
Yep. Yeah, same.
But, like, guys who grew multi-location.
You're not exposed to them enough. No, we had none of those.
So when you say, like, good business people, you had people that were, like, either running a good solo practice or maybe a practice plus doctor.
Yes.
It's incredible.
They put in the effort. They were marketing.
They're going to impart the knowledge of things like, it's important to understand financials. You need to know a P&L. But it's not going to be at the level of scale or anything like that.
Yeah. And because of that environment, that was what I wrote down, was like the fear versus the abundance. Like, dental school shoves fear into everybody. Like, you're going to get taken to the board. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. You're going to screw up, and they're going to sue you. So you got to do everything right. And, you know, just do the filling first. And just, you know, it's all slowed down. And the reason that I struggle with that is it's such a beautiful profession. Like, those of us who are in it, even if you're not doing it terribly well, not a good marketer, you're still able to make a good profit. There should be a better, more abundant mindset. But it was all built off of the environment that, you know, the people that were teaching us, and they didn't have the greatest of experiences. So that was hard, in my opinion, to recognize on the back end of it. But more than anything, it was, I needed to learn business, not dentistry. And that was a big, big deal for most.
I want to just add something to that, Dwight. The idea of learn business, people don't even know what that is. Like, we always joke around that our dentist will say, like, you know, I want to work on the business versus in the business. And when we ask, you know, masterminders and other dentists, what does that look like? It's typically, you know, I want to go to the office on Friday and do payroll, you know, a function that all of us outsource. So yeah. They don't even understand like what business is. I learned all my business teachings from non-dentist friends.
For sure.
Well, not all, you know, I learned a lot from the three of you guys, but the majority of my early learning was a dismissive, you're not in dentistry, you're not a dentist, what do you know? Now, business is all the same. Cost of goods sold, marketing, innovation, team, leadership, it's all the same. And unfortunately, us dentists, we listen to dentists more than we listen to anybody else. So it's, you know, we even hire dentists to help us with real estate now. It's like, I mean, you know, there's courses on how to do residential real estate taught by dentists for six figures. So it's like, there's a filter that we're blind to, unfortunately.
Buffett says, do not attend industry events. And that is the smartest thing I've ever done. Yeah. Because it doesn't jade you by getting all the knowledge of what you should do in some random industry. And dentistry is notorious for that.
It's funny, Trey, you say that. I used to go to a conference out on the West Coast called MozCon. And so it was a big marketing conference made by the search engine tool.
Mozilla?
Called Moz. Mozilla was a browser from Netscape. But like, it's the same. So it's Moz was Moz. Anyway. I was the only, and my wife and I would go because at the time she had a boutique and she was learning about marketing for her boutique and I was learning. And so it was always like this funny thing, like, you know, what level of marketing are you in? I'm like, well, I'm a dentist. And people are like, what are you doing here? Kind of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So Trey, to your point, I love that because it puts you outside the box of this like cesspool of like, you should do what I do. And this, you should do, you know, do this marketing. It worked for my practice. That gets you way outside the box of like blue ocean strategy.
No, for sure. Well, and one of the worst things with dental events, you know, first off, you go to a conference, the vast majority of conferences are sales pitches, which I might add the 1 hour business course we had in dental school was nothing but a sales pitch for outside vendors to come in and pitch to dental students. So it was worthless. Right. Yeah. But you get into groups where everyone is like-minded, and there's some very specific ones that I can think of that are similar, and everyone sits around and goes, you know, everyone has the same problems. Isn't it interesting? And the first thing you think of is, yep, and that's why I'm out of here, because nobody's thinking outside the box. You're just duplicating each other.
Another thing, I'm going to take it on a different tangent too, away from kind of CE and education. I wish someone had said to me, the dentistry that stresses you out right now is going to become the easiest part of your job.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
So true.
Big.
It will almost become the therapeutic place for you to escape the, oh my gosh, the to-do list I know that's sitting in my office, or the 100 post-it notes that someone put there, or the I know I have to work on my business and I have to raise my family, all these things, right? Dentistry becomes the bliss. And I wish someone had told me that because you become masterful at doing something enough and the chaos is still always around you, and you better wrap your hands around how to manage that chaos.
Yeah, I think that's huge. That makes so much. And the truth is you're not told any of that, and you get to be held back completely, and you're just like, okay. And there's a million ways to do it. You know, you can understand, you can appreciate that there are a lot of ways to do it, but that you will survive as long as you try. You get out there, you get after it. You know,
I wish someone had told me to pay it more attention to occlusion, pay more attention to dentures. And no, I don't go clinical that often, but that's the setting place for almost everything dentistry. I think that's such a foundational piece. Craig, we get asked all the time, like, what CE should I do? And usually we're like,
No one listens to me on that one because, I appreciate that the problem with occlusion training, this is something I talk to my own doctors about all the time. When you go to the how to prep a veneer in 5 easy steps, in your mind, you're saying, I'm paying X number of thousands of dollars. And Monday, I know how to prep a veneer in 5 easy steps. So they do the veneer. They understand that. They never understood the occlusion. 6 months later, the porcelain breaks. They don't understand why. or, you know, how to place the implant in five easy steps. Monday, they do the implant, and then 6 months or 2 years later, the implant fails because it's, you know, the bite is wrong, or they weren't looking at the whole picture. So
wouldn't you guys agree that becomes, Craig, sorry to interrupt, but
would
you guys agree that that's like, even in our postgraduate education, I think we come to that realization. Let's just say you're on this path, right? And you're doing, oh, I got a veneer case in this case. And then later on in your career, you want to become this master in occlusion, because Craig, to your point, you're sick of the failures. You're sick of this.
Right.
Wait a second. I think I skipped a step and maybe I shouldn't have done this. And it's funny. I wish I had just paid more
attention. Well, it's frustrating because you don't understand why your dentistry is failing.
Right.
And
you
know, you put in this beautiful bridge and everything was sealed and it rocks loose, and you occlusion's the bedrock for everything.
Yeah.
It's the bottom of the pyramid.
Is the bedrock for cosmetics, you know? And I didn't, I wanted to just get through that and the rubber base and get, I hated it. It did. And then later on, I was like, wait a second. This is everything, proportions and setting and lips.
Yeah, when you set up two front teeth in a cosmetic case, everything goes from there.
Totally.
Everything from the centrals.
But I felt like it was worlds away. It was like, oh, that's old school, and I'm going new school cosmetic. And my naivety, and you know, just I had to go back and fix that later on.
There's a parallel now, Peter. Sorry to cut you, and I want to let the other guy speak as well. But maybe dentures now with Exocad and all that, I don't think that. You know,
that's
true. You could do it digitally. So,
but remember the setting the teeth and the wax rims.
Of course,
that. All right, let me keep going, and then I'm going
to
stop talking. My ideas.
To experience from that.
The next thing I would say, guys, that I wish I'd been told is to minimize your student loans, just because they give you. And there's two parts to this: minimize your student loans and find a strategy to get out once you have that amount of after dental school. Meaning, when I say minimize, is that you don't have to take the maximum approved amount that you get, right? So many people are like, well, I got approved for the $50,000 a year or the $30,000 a year. My tuition is 17, so like I'll just take it, right? At least that was the case for me in dental school. Was that the case for y'all? It was like they would give you so much more than you actually, quote unquote, needed?
Not about needs, but want. I fundamentally disagree with you. I think that's bad preaching.
Tell me, didn't explain it correctly then, Trey.
They give you X amount. Take every dollar you can possibly get. There is no point in living on a scarcity budget when you're going to do well afterwards.
Oh, my
That's
gosh.
The mentality you take.
And also, I want to add the next comment for Trey. Buy the Mercedes. That is exactly 1 year of your salary in the minute you get out. So if you plan on making $150,000,
totally different.
No,
that's irresponsible.
Let me tell you something, Trey.
That's irresponsible. It doesn't piggyback on the thing that I'm talking about. This goes back to the discussion you and me, Pete, and I had a long time ago on a pod that was about buying a car. It's a forever disagreement because we fundamentally have different underlying principles of how we believe about debt or liability or however you want to call it. But
Trey,
you get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Where's the harm? Did you, and this is a personal question, did you have to pay for your dental school?
I did.
You did, even though your dad was a dentist?
Yep.
Knew you'd be practicing with him?
I went to about 15,000 years of college, so.
Okay.
No, I had two sisters, so my dad also thought he told me it was important for me to participate in my education, which I fully believe.
Fair, okay. The only reason I'm saying, I guess, is that maybe times are a little bit different, and I think that there is a business in lending, and that applies to the dental schools as well, right? Meaning, and they will, I got approved for so much. And so I hear you on, yes, you're going to make a lot, but at a clip rate where there's a 6% interest rate or 7% interest rate, right? And you have this massive snowball rolling down this entire, Craig?
Yeah, it's higher.
Okay, so you have, I took it all because I'm going to make a bunch. And then lo and behold, this snowball is rolling down the hill. And we all know about compounding interest, right? When it works in our benefit. But guess what? It also can work to your detriment as well. And so what is the harm? What is the harm of saying, let me just live lean? Because to my second point about getting out of it when you're out of school, I tell people to stay living lean, even though, yes, you're now a new minted doctor and you're going to get the prestige and respect and blah, blah, blah. But live like a dental student for a couple of years. Get yourself out of that. The most freeing moment I ever had was writing that last check of my dental school, my student loan. It was super oppressive. I felt it was psychologically a barrier. And again, I'm speaking from my own bias, but it was, I was really glad that I got it paid off really quickly out of school, like really quickly. I think I paid it off in 5 or 6 years, and I had a lot of debt. I was out of
school. There is a limit.
Out of state,
obviously.
Sorry.
I mean, when kids are getting out with $500,000
now.
Plus.
Wait a second. I thought it was take as much as they'll give you.
No, well, if you can get $1 million, you don't do it. But they're not going to give you $1 million.
I think we're answering the question from our own specific biases. Trey, you are a blazing. I'm sorry, Trey was asking that question. It's a very specific bias because Trey is a blazing entrepreneur. You are a, and again, I'm just calling it what it is. You are going to double down. You are going to leverage. This is your nature. If we look at our mastermind or the segment of dentistry that's probably listening to this practice, or even just the segment of dentistry, not even our listener, our mastermind, we go into dentistry because we are a conservative bunch. So what I'm concerned about, and this kind of dovetails into this larger question, and I don't need to hijack this, with the cost of education where it is now and the median salary, if you're not going to be an entrepreneurial dentist, but you're just going to be the regular dentist, the average dentist, do you still think take as much as possible?
This is, and let me also say something, Trey. You were able to, you knew your path. Go into a practice. I've got a path blazed for me. If I came out with the amount of just all the unsecured debt, and student loan is unsecured debt, which banks look at when you're trying to get a loan for a building or a practice, they look at that and they say, oh yeah, student debt, it's fine. They freaking hate it. Why? Because there's no recourse on that debt. There's nothing to collateralize that debt. So it puts you in a hindered position in order to make that entrepreneurial leap.
Hey everybody, let's hang out in Scottsdale, Arizona. Join Pete and me at the 2024 Bulletproof Summit at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback in Scottsdale. Immerse yourself in innovation and inspiration. Unite and strengthen your team and earn 16 CE credits. That's June 14th and 15th. Register at bulletproofsummit.com. We can't wait to connect with you and your entire team. See you soon, guys. Yeah, it saddles
Craig,
you.
Craig it's, nailed it. And it goes back to the deal of your belief on debt is what really matters here.
No,
because
it's not.
It does. Fully true. Because I don't, debt is not an issue for me. Now,
neither for me, but I,
you guys
I
are
agree with you.
Third generation dentist. Of course it's
No, Peter, no, that's unfair.
That's a cop out. Yeah, that's a cop out.
Unfair.
That's not true.
I my first year, my dad said, I don't even have room for you, but you're welcome to be here. I moonlighted in different offices. I made like 75 grand with my dad. He ran a good practice with a good name, but there was not a single business move in there.
All right.
So,
fair. Whatever.
But Trey,
I guess we forever will disagree on this.
Yeah, but that's appropriate because there are two versions of this, and neither are right or wrong because it is how you believe debt. Because to me, and I'm still in the boat. Give me as much debt as possible. I'm gonna run and leverage.
Actually, me too. So I got asked recently if they wanted to borrow more money in September of 2022 at 3%. I'm like, how much will you give me?
Yeah,
I'm like, well, how much do you want? I'm like, I want as much as possible. And another thing, by the way, I just want to add a quick tip. Banks will give you money when you don't need it. The minute you need it, they will not give you money. So the time to ask for money, ask for a credit line, ask for a financing line.
Credit
line is
completely different than asking for money.
Well, I'm just saying in general, like that, I agree with Trey on that one.
Okay, fair.
I think Peter and I may be a little closer is that if you pull back and think big picture is I struggle with the systemic societal problem that we create. I think, you know, we're talking about banks, you know, like one of the things I wrote down that I wish that they told me is when I walked out to build a practice, I would not listen to banks. I should not listen to suppliers and I should not listen to everybody trying to sell me stuff. I should join masterminds. I should be a part of other businesses and kind of comply to that. But I think that there's, because the government subsidizes these loans and does all these things and offers you so much money, we come out and we fall prey to people who are willing to give us more money. So to me, it's this societal problem that we've created. In no other country is this going, I get it. There's opportunity here. There's all types of things. But everywhere else in the world, it is a concept of breaking that down. And now sometimes the practices that some of us are buying right now are mostly based on practices that they were just continuing to collect debt and said, oh, you can do this because you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, and doctors never default and dentists never default. Just take it, take it, take it. And guess what? That's how most DSOs are growing right now, is buying practices of people who couldn't handle it. I agree that some of us have a mindset of we know where too much is too much. But I've got doctors in my group right now that I don't know that they'll ever be able to become partner because they have $850,000 in debt. And because it was a government instituted systemic problem, now they're only paying like
career limiting
interest. Yeah. They're only paying interest. They're paying $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in interest right now because they can't even put down anything on the principal. Guess what? It makes them ineligible to become partners in my organization, makes them ineligible to buy practices.
It makes them ineligible to invest globally. So like an investment in your practice is just one investment.
So if they don't have the decision for like heavy entrepreneurs on this call, I get it. Get debt, knock it out, kill it. Because we know even if it's at an 8% interest rate, we can make that practice grow by 16, 20%. So it's worthy. But for the average dentist, and I'm talking about 85%, if not 90 or more, you're talking about a mindset that is very predatory, and we have a systemic problem.
Trey, where's the harm? Let me just ask you this, Trey. Where's the harm in my logic?
I don't think there's harm. I think the issue is...
Where's the disadvantage? So
the disadvantage becomes... Well, and I'll say this. Debt is a tool. So Dwight's right.
But that's you're ill-prepared predatory, but that doesn't... point to take advantage of that tool, meaning you know nothing about leverage when you get out of dental school. You know nothing about reinvesting. You've been getting your ass kicked for 4 years, so you're not a savvy investor yet to take this capital. Yes.
That doesn't mean that everybody's like that. I agree that most people may be like that if they don't choose to do that. But debt is math, and it is a tool, and it's how you believe you can use that tool. And yes, you are not equipped to do those things.
Saying this because now you're saying it as a tool. A lot of it,
but I know because I believed it. I believed it from day one. So Trey 1.0 is Trey 3.0.
Okay.
But you take the max amount. I would have preached the same thing in dental school. I'm taking the max amount of money I can be given from there. I go to the bank. They say, you'll give you this. It's great. How much will you give me for working capital? No, I want more. I need more. I want more. Because it's a tool, but I know how I feel about debt. I knew it back then, and I knew it now. I've never changed about that because it's much more fundamental to my belief system in that regard.
Well defended. Thank you.
I agree with you, by the way. Like early books, like Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Let me make a comment to that. I'm sorry, Trey. You also know how to do math, and I know we're boiling this down. But a lot of people are not. That's my equipped point. And have not been not taught there. How to do math. They were not raised by people who made them think about this. And
this reminds me of like Dave Ramsey versus like
that's exactly
David
what
Sachs,
I'm thinking.
Basically,
that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
but
Dave
basically,
like, hey, tell me your problem. Wow, you got a lot of debt, buddy. You gotta push. You know,
but,
listen,
but
it's,
Craig,
it's
what
a, live lean and then get hit by a bus tomorrow.
What I'm saying is that there's a time and place. There's an evolution, and so for me, at least that was
there is an evolution.
And so, that's like, true. I was not, you know, if you gave me a bunch of money at 26 years old, I would buy nice cars and a motorcycle and be looking at sport boats, right? I wouldn't be looking at, hey, what LP investments can I make right now kind of thing. It's just a different psychology. All right. Can I say my last thing? And I promise I'll shut up.
Go for it.
Go for it.
I like hearing you talk.
No, thanks. All right.
I like
so
the way
this
you
is
talk.
Completely unrelated to something. And Dwight, you tiptoed around this in the beginning. I wish someone had said, hey, you are going to get reported to the board in your career. And it's going to be a number. You do enough dentistry and you're getting reported. I was petrified throughout my entire career that, and I probably cowtowed. I kowtowed to everyone because I was like, oh, don't report, you know, like, off, you know, and it was like this operating from this position of like, I wish someone said, hey, it's a numbers game. You're going to have some crazy patients. You're probably going to get reported. You know, it doesn't mean that you're a bad dentist. I don't know about you guys, but like every dentist, every exceptional dentist that I know has been reported to the board. So it's not that it's like this tarnish on you. And when it did happen for me, right, it was actually a color issue on number 8. And this guy wanted to go nuclear on it.
Well, dude, I was really upset with you when you did that to me. You know, I didn't like the color.
Yeah, he went nuclear. He said the people in front of the cars are laughing. They can see me in their rearview mirror in my car, and they're laughing at me. And I was like, "Oh shit!" Anyway, what was cool? What was cool is that we pay our dental insurance. Our malpractice insurance for that very reason. So I thought like I was alone and I was going to have to fight this. No. And I was like, "Holy shit! This is going to," you know, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat. It was that kind of thing. And then, like, what I realized is that that's what I paid for. I paid for that "quote unquote" insurance and well-being, and I actually finally gave them the reins, and everything got dismissed, right? Of course. And they just handled it, and it took away that brain damage and that stomach lining that I should have gotten back. But it's a numbers game. Would you guys not agree, or would you agree? I should say, enough people, and it's bound to happen. Yes.
I think I'd make it a larger comment. Sorry to cut into what you're saying, Dwight.
Are we making overarching statements with broad brushstrokes?
Yeah, because I have not yet been to the board, but I have been the.
Have you been on the recipient? I didn't say to the board. I said reported.
No, I have not, but I've had vicarious exposure to malpractice through like oral surgeons, three different claims. And vicarious exposure to other things, and also employment liabilities claims, which is
actually bring up a great point. You are really great at having a sweaty back conversation, whereas and just communicating with the patient. Most disgruntled patients, most board complaints happen because they thought that the dentist didn't care.
Yeah, I'm just saying the board complaint conversation should go to malpractice.
Is that right?
That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you. The only reason I haven't had a claim against me is because I picked up the phone and called the patient myself and said, "Hey, I'll stand by my work and take care of you. Come on in, we'll get it done." And the difference is those who hide and freak out and they don't know what to do it. But the point is, yes, you buy car insurance because it's going to happen, or that there's a risk and the high risk.
Yeah, I guess
you
my
do
point
the same
was,
thing
is,
with malpractice.
Don't let it paralyze you like it did.
It paralyzes everybody in dental school and for the first 5 to 10 years out. And I have associates right now that they do that. And we can talk about who's more likely to get sued and who's not. I mean, we know that there's those types of dentists that are hyper academic, low on relationship, low on communication skills. And those are the ones who are most likely. They're probably some of the best dentists out there, but they're the highest risk people because they don't want to communicate, or they're filled with this fear. But I totally agree with you that if I could at least know, hey, this is what it's about. You pay for this. Your malpractice insurance is not just an insurance company. They have a long line of lawyers that help you settle things quickly or manage it or kind of put a little front. You're not alone. Move forward. This is normal and it's expected. And I come from a long line of surgeons and docs in my family. And I remember not getting claimed, but something happened. Like I was doing a surgery around an inferior alveolar nerve and I had to really work to get that thing to come back and things like that. I remember having this conversation with people in my family and they're like, if you're not having mistakes happen, you're not doing enough dentistry. And that's what you're saying is the likelihood is the longer you practice, the likelihood is there because it is the practice of medicine. It's not the perfection of medicine and things are going to happen and every patient's different. And the same protocol you use that's worked on 5,000 patients doesn't happen to work on this one person who has styrofoam bone and an implant goes right through or things like that. Things can happen and you can't be, modified by fear. You got to be out there and serve the patient pool. That's the right thing.
You want to hear
something
very sobering, by the way. I was at my son's baseball game the other day and my father and I were talking about like my role and like what I've done, kind of how I've transitioned out of the chair. And he said, Craig, he was talking about his clinical practice of dentistry. My dad practiced for, 60 years. He's 82 now. He hasn't practiced in 5 years. And he said, honestly, some nights I still have nightmares about cases. He's like, I still have nightmares about some cases I've done. Rehearsing in his mind. He was an exceptional dentist. What a difficult thing. And I love where you were going with this, Peter, but I want to broaden it. It's not just the fear of the board complaint. It's the fear of being judged harshly by one of your professions. It's the 100%. Fear
it's
of
the scarlet
malpractice.
Letter. It's the scarlet letter.
Right. It is, Peter, you're famous for saying this. I'm going to steal it as my own, but the shape of a dental firing squad is a circle. when medical doctors go through medical residency together, there's groups of 4 and 5 of them, and they meet the patient and they co-diagnose, co-round, co-treat, they collaborate. When dentists are in dental school, it's all, don't look at my wax up, where's my class rank? We are trained to compete. We are not trained to collaborate.
That's correct.
We are trained to not have people look over the shoulder. And that's why when your patient goes to another dentist, more often than not, someone will shit talk you. And that is absolutely fucking abhorrent. Like, if anybody's listening to that, stop it right away. Like, that's the biggest service we could provide in this quick podcast today, is don't judge other people's work. You don't know what it's like. All of us have done crown preps on number 15 on a woman that has basically like Parkinson's, and the shit looks terrible. Because yeah. Dentistry is a team sport. Patients need to cooperate and sit very still to do perfect work. So if you have a spastic patient, it's going to be difficult. And I think just something very simple is, hey, I see what this dentist did. I'm sure they had your best interest at heart. You know, I do things differently. It's like, that dentist likes chocolate, I like vanilla ice cream. Let's do it differently. Now I get the benefit of what that dentist did and it didn't work. Now we have to do something else. Because let me tell you, I've put in perfect dentistry before, perfect. And 3 years later, it was in someone's hand with decay, recurrent decay. And it wasn't decay at the margin, or maybe it was even, maybe, who knows. But we have to take into consideration the patient's biology and their habits. So we are treated by the patient as a carpenter. You made this bench for me, and 5 years later, it broke apart. No, this is biologic carpentry. I can build this perfect bench, but if you don't take care of it and put it under out of the wind and rain, it's going to fall apart in a year.
In the winter. It's
right. Be, so we put this beautiful work in patients' mouths and tell them, I fixed your problem. No, if you eat gummy bears for breakfast, I don't care what the dentistry looks like. It's going to go under a lot of wear and tear. And that is what people need to hear. It is not just your clinical dentistry. It's your understanding of what the factors are, making behavior suggestions, telling patients early, like, hey, if you don't take care of this $50,000 of work, it will fall out of your mouth. And even if you do take exceptional care of it, it's probably going to last you 12, 15, maybe 17 years. I'm not, you know, there's not heroics here. So I just think that the judgment and the shame has to be broadened to that as well. Larger.
That's just one of the, that's something to truly be ashamed of in our industry.
We're terrible with this.
That's crippling to our industry.
And we love to do it. Mm-hmm. I even have a doctor in my own office that does that. I just had to sit him down and be like, dude, you cannot ever do this. Not to doctors in this office, but to anyone. Because when you shit talk somebody, everyone looks bad. You think you're making yourself look good by saying, oh, so-and-so is not a great dentist or whatever. You all look bad. It's a lesson I had to learn the hard way too. You know,
I think that to dovetail from that into something along those lines, not only are you know, shit happens, do anything at scale, anything enough, bad things happen. So although it started with a board complaint, that can be broadened to so many things that will happen over time, over volume. But how to deal with that is also something that is an important way to look at it. And that's the skill that you want to polish and you want to perfect, and it's communication.
And get a support group for that too. A support group is important. You know, there's something that someone brought up to me recently, the difference between shame and guilt. Shame means I am a bad person. I don't like me. Guilt is I don't like that behavior. So listen, some of us had to go in and do a full mouth recon to realize we don't know our occlusion, it broke or fell apart, and we got the training. It's not shame. It's like, okay, you have to learn. When you get out of dental school, you have to learn what you don't know. You have to learn what you don't even know that you don't know. And how do you know it? You get some lady, you convince her to give you, or some man to give you a bunch of money, and you fail them. And that sucks. We've all done it. You know, at first, when we get out of school, you got student loans. You got to tell them, yep, I can do that. And you don't know you can. And then the shame and the guilt start. So
let's migrate to another one if you guys have it, or if not. I don't want to stay stuck on
what Craig said. I like what Craig said. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Loud and clear.
Yeah. And it was related to the fact that, like, even for, yes, on Facebook and all those groups, if you get on there and everybody's just shooting each other down. But, you know, I even see this in my own practices with multiple doctors. You know, you walk into the doctor's lounge and you see somebody who has is seeing a patient again of somebody else's, and I'm like, oh, Dwight, would you mind coming over and looking at this? I'm really worried. Like, I don't know why they treatment planned it this way, and I don't know why this. And
in front of the
patient?
Like,
and it's notoriously like a young associate criticizing an older doctor who's been practicing for a really long time. And I notoriously walk up and I say, hey, I don't need to look at the x-ray. I just want to ask you a question. Have you met the patient? It's like the first thing I ask, because I've gone through how many times when I've prejudged the work that's been done. And then I walk in there and was like, yeah, that's probably much better than what I could have done on this patient. Not because they're medically complex or not, whatever, but their attitude, nobody wants to work on them. They're difficult. They bite you on everything. Like they only want the cheapest option possible. And you feel, I'm going to get you out of pain. You need to do this. But like, why was that all treatment plan? You go through all these things and you realize like I agree with you. We are taught to judge quickly. And that's where I really, you know, I see as the most painful part of our profession. And we should be taught otherwise, and we should also be taught like how to manage it, you know, and go down that road. But I think that's a huge topic that I wish I knew better for sure.
Yeah. And how many times have you judged only to realize like, shit, I didn't have all the information, and you can't get that back. And that goes into the one thing that I think is outside of the business stuff. We're not taught leadership. We're not taught basic leadership coaching skills. So even if you're not going to be a blazing entrepreneur like the guys that are on the call with me here, and you just want to be a dentist, you're going, even as an associate or just as a solo practicing dentist, you have to use leverage. You need to work through other people, your assistant, your hygienist, your front office people. This is just leadership 101. And the thing that I kind of refer like in my office to this lost decade for me, where I was judging people, I was a really crappy leader, and I was a diminisher. I made everybody less. I didn't want to, but I just wasn't trained. I didn't play sports in high school or college. I never understood like true coaching. And the greats that I've been lucky to be around, some of my friends, are brilliant with their people. They make people better than they are because of they make everybody better than they were just by knowing them. And when you can start doing that, even if you're just going to be a part-time associate working 3 days a week and you want to have a side hustle doing real estate or whatever you are, if you have a basic understanding of leadership, you will grow disproportionately in life. And as a parent as well, I mean, leadership is influence, and you want to influence children and your own kids. And I just think a basic diet of some leadership coaching training would be invaluable for the dental student.
Just the exposure to it. I mean, yeah, even if you had just the exposure to it, just if you were exposed, you at least know at that point, you know, going back to the financial conversation, if you just had a little exposure, then you could steer down that path to start learning on your own and seek your own progress. And we all have our own evolution. You know, speaking to the lost decade, Craig, every one of us has learned whether it be what not to do or what to do, and a little bit of both somewhere in between. So you just keep moving forward, trying to learn as much as you can about all those things. So the exposure in dental school would have been nice. Leadership, right. Business, you know, hardship, things that may happen, how to address these things, communication.
And what do we get?
Just a touch would be better than what we got.
Right. And what do we get on Facebook? We get the crab pot approach. You know, can you believe I had a working interview for an assistant and she didn't even show up? And then it's just this nonstop dialogue of people suck and this is ridiculous and hygienists, we got to do away with hygienists and these prima donnas. It's like, oh my word, if that's how you're feeling, like imagine what your practice is like if you're just venting and then the hygienists are venting. So there's such a divide. And, you know, who taught this to me was my buddy John, who I think a couple of you met, Dwight, you had lunch with him. I would listen to John talk on the phone with his team members. I'm like, who is that? Oh, that's my CFO. I'm like, he, you know, why are you doing that? Why, you know, it's incredible, like the level of care and development he genuinely puts in his people. Randy's like that too. All great business people, unless you're like a software engineer, are just great at working through people. They're great leaders.
I think one thing, you know, to move into something a little bit different that I think would be really cool to have in dental school at this point in time, much more so now, although very apparent when we got out of dental school as well. But there are so many options of what to do now, whether it be open your own, work for someone, group practice. You know, instead of looking at things that go back to scarcity and abundance, if you could have a non-judgmental way of just saying, hey, here's some paths you could take, it would be super cool to see, to be able to evaluate those options on your own, as opposed to have someone just go corporate monster, other people. And that's kind of what they're given from the standpoint of golden age of dentistry is over because these people are ruining it. Now you suck and now you're going to have to deal with this. By the way, your debt's terrible and you'll never pay it off. Good luck. So having some options without that judgment would be, I think, a very cool deal.
Because you took too much.
Yeah, yeah. You'll never pay it off and then you'll end up like Pete. It'll be terrible. Just barely getting by, skimping by.
What's the heart of that? What's the part of that? Right. Guys, that was awesome. That was awesome. And unless you've got anything else, we'll wrap. I think that's Craig. That was a great topic. Go ahead. You're going to say something, Craig.
Covered a lot of ground.
They can't hear him because he muted himself.
I'm sorry about that. Yes, that's like my nightmare.
I saw your leaning in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So the only last piece of tactical advice I'd provide, and I'm going to give this to you guys
Wait
as well.
Even though you're about to do something tactical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Five steps.
Look at Dwight's face.
Yeah, he's leaning in.
Yeah. 2024. March 5th. The time is 1:52
A day that'll go into infamy, the day that Bitcoin's peaking. Kudos, Peter Bolden, for that. Yep. But anyway, one tactical advice. I read a book recently that was given to me by someone on my team. I told Peter about it. I want to tell you guys about it as well. It's The Self-Aware Leader by Maxwell. You know, I'm a Maxwell fan. I know you guys are too. But I never realized Maxwell had failures. I don't know why. I mean, this is something that kind of to the new dentist listening to this as well. You know, we all have a tendency to compare our chapter one with someone else's chapter 10. Mm-hmm. And I just presumed Maxwell was a pastor. He's a badass. He has 14, 20 companies, the Maxwell Institute. I didn't think he failed. I didn't think he had major leadership failures. I don't know why I didn't think that. So The Self-Aware Leader, he goes into that. And it was such a cathartic thing for me to hear a great failing. I think that's what, if we're doing a good service in this podcast and if the people are enjoying it, it's partly because we're willing to share the failures, the lost decades, the frustrations,
the mistakes. Think, Craig, all of that is, and none of us here will disagree, all of that was accelerated learning for us.
Yeah.
All, right? You know, you quickly learn in your Petri dish, like that didn't work, or your beta test, I should say. You know, you're beta testing all throughout your career and you're just... Don't be afraid. I think what you're saying is don't be afraid to fail and take chances. And it's a numbers game, like going back to my period about the board thing.
Yeah. And then the grace that comes in there, give yourself a little grace. Even at this ripe old age of whatever, 52 and failure, like learning that Maxwell failed, like, holy smokes. Like, you know, he's a pastor. Like he's got a special
place.
Just
so you know, that wasn't a tactical thing you just mentioned. I just want
no,
to
it's
sure
getting the book and reading it. That's tactical.
Baby steps.
That
give him a chance.
Okay,
baby
steps.
Just
read it's like, give it to
it's
him.
Something.
Man.
Please,
give
Dwight,
it to
please,
him.
Guys.
Reading the book is tactical.
Yeah. Or okay, then I'll give you a last piece
you
of tactical
such
advice.
Such a long way. Don't step on it, bro.
I know. Oh, I know. God. This is the leadership training I'm talking about. So anyway, the tactical piece of advice is one that I've given over and over again. If you want your basic level of coaching, find some small reason to celebrate anything that your team has done, and go up to them and let them know, hey, Becky, appreciate that you've been with me for 10 years and blah, blah, blah. That's my tactical advice. Find ways to appreciate some your people. Well, what you appreciates in value, and you can actually scale the human capital. You can grow your human capital just by appreciating it. That's my tactical. I won't do anything until next year. No more tactical.
He's done.
I'm done.
Craig will be back in 2025. Stay tuned.
With the two steps to getting out of bed on time.
With how to read that book.
How to stay hydrated.
Oh my god. All right, guys. That's it for this episode, and we will see y'all. Oh wait. Can't forget, Craig.
Summit.
Can't just rely
on I know.
We
still
you.
Are doing summits.
Yeah.
And this
yeah,
one's
yeah.
gonna sell out. Imagine that.
It's good stuff.
June 14th and 15th.
Yes, exactly.
What'd you say?
And pay for itself. Let's not get carried away, Dwight.
Dwight.
Did you have the wild salmon at the Wynn Dwight, did you have the wild stem at the win?
We're still paying for it.
Was it worth $72,000?
I had 40. I had 40. I just want you to know that me personally, I had 42 bottles of water.
Oh, that's.
But the water was only $19. So,
times 42 for me.
$800 on your.
Right.
You should have taken less money and gone lean.
Yeah.
You would have been, you would have been better. You're right.
You spent $800 on water.
Funny story is I talked to Tony Robbins's event people, and I'm like, why don't you do it at the Wynn? He's like, we can't do it at the Wynn. You would lose tons of money. So I'm like, okay. So Tony, who's a big deal, will lose money. What are jackasses like us going to do at the Wynn? But listen, it was amazing. It was super fun. And you know what? Our listeners deserve it. They deserve it.
Guess what?
They deserve wild salmon.
Accelerated learning, like I said. Accelerated learning. That was funny, Craig. That was good. That was good. All right, guys. We'll see y'all next time. Over and out.
See you guys.
Bye, everybody.